And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about food, travel, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm back in my happy place in Margaret River in the southwest of Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and today I'm in my home in Stavanger in southwest Norway.
Oh.
So we're both finally home.
We are both finally home, and we haven't chatted to each other for a couple of weeks because we had the guest episode last week, which was super interesting with Sunil Vohra, the CEO of Motorsport Australia. So jump on and listen to that if you're interested in getting involved in motorsport. We recorded that podcast just after the Australian Grand Prix. So it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen you, Mon. How are you going?
Oh, look, I'm doing all right.
You've been everywhere.
I have. I mean, you could say the same thing. I've only just got home from traveling the coast of Norway and enjoying a slow weekend, which, you know, today's race, I guess, was pretty much fed straight into that.
Yeah, if you're new to Formula One, please don't think this is the norm. It really isn't. But today's race was slow, uneventful, 20 starters, 20 finishes, no crashes, no major incidents.
No overtakes, really?
A couple.
No overtakes.
Couple, but nothing that, yeah, you know, kind of made us go. I mean, I was shouting at the TV, but not for the reason of the overtakes. I was shouting at the commentary team on KO Sports who were driving me a little bit batty.
Oh, look, I'm not going to make you jealous with my lovely Formula One TV commentators because they were great.
Oh, were they?
And I know you did say when you were watching, I think it was FP3, the practice three, you did message me and you were like, oh my God, why are they talking about Hadjar's underwear?
Oh, that was in quali, yeah, because Hadjar had that issue in quali, right, where his race harness was getting in the way or uncomfortable.
Way too tight.
Yeah, it was causing him issues in the car and he couldn't think of anything else. He couldn't concentrate. And then Crofty and Jacques Villeneuve went into this massive spiel about what underwear is he wearing? Should he be wearing Y fronts instead of boxers? You know, it was like, please, guys, for God's sake. It was pain, yeah. I mean, you were watching that feed as well, weren't you?
I was, because for some reason our Formula One TV wasn't working for Crawley, but it managed to work for the actual race. So I did actually hear that part of the commentary of like, oh my gosh, what? Like, fair call if you're going to mention that. Okay, maybe it you know, his discomfort could be something as simple as wearing uncomfortable underwear, or it could be a bigger issue. But like, to go into detail on
it was too much. I did have commentator Paul Marinelli from one of our earlier episodes. I had his voice in my head while that commentary was going on, and also during the race, because he has no tolerance for ordinary commentary or just waffling or commentators trying to be funny or anything like that, which is what I felt like they were trying to do. But Mon, during the race, what Crofty kept saying, honestly, he asked Jacques Villeneuve this same question, I want to say four times, but it might have even been a bit more. Why don't they swap Oscar Piastri with Lando Norris and let Oscar go and gun it and use up his tyres? Let Lando maybe save his tyres a bit. And then if Oscar doesn't catch up to Max, then Lando's will have some pace and some rubber left on his tyres to make a final charge towards the end. And he kept banging on about the strategy of McLaren. So actually, we should probably start with the race result.
It was 1-2-3, right? It was the same as quali. Nothing
exactly
changed.
So that was Max Verstappen, who got his first pole position since Austria last year.
Well deserved.
Yeah, well deserved. I mean, he put in a mega qualifying lap and he was just absolutely jubilant on the team radio, which is not something you always hear from Max.
It was so nice to hear him.
Max Verstappen took out the win, and then Lando Norris in second and Oscar Piastri in third, both McLaren drivers. Getting back to my commentary points, they were just going on and on about the McLaren strategy. Why are both drivers on the same strategy? Yeah. I mean, were they doing the same in the Formula One feed?
Yes, they were, but in contrast to what Crofty was saying about, like, why doesn't he just let him pass and wear up his tyres? Mm-hmm. Like, they were actually smart and giving real insight. And I think this is why I like the F1 feed so much. You've got race drivers from different kind of types of racing all coming in and bringing their knowledge of racing. I mean, obviously Jacques and Crofty are also racers, but I don't know, they just seem a lot more, dare I say, intelligent, or they say more intelligent things. And they did say, you know, it begs belief, like, would they let them swap? I mean, Oscar's been talking about how, or, you know, Oscar's obviously able to get up to the back of Lando, and maybe if he could get up to the back of Verstappen, then, but there was none of this, like, let him do it, wear his tires out. And then it was more of a let Oscar through, see what he can do. And then if it's not working, swap them back over. Like, that was the extent. Like, it wasn't loaded like what it sounds like Jacques and Crofty were doing.
I've got to say, it was led by Crofty, who we've named this podcast after. And I love Crofty normally, but it was driving me insane during the race. I actually screamed at the TV at one point and said, stop asking the same question. Like, just stop it. I'm frustrated just thinking about that now.
I did get a bit frustrated actually watching the race. And from the commentary, they were saying McLaren just did not take any risks with their strategy. And that was very clear. They really didn't take any risks. They had obviously two cars running in second and third, and they wanted the race win. But rather than taking risks and trying to get Verstappen or Red Bull to take a risk so they could try and cover off Red Bull somehow, they pitted Piastri early to cover off Russell in the Mercedes behind him. And then they pitted Norris at this, like, exactly the same time as Verstappen, which ended in a little bit of a argy-bargy coming out of the pit lane.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of funny. And Norris was like, oh, he pushed me off.
I know. He never pushed him off.
And straight away on the radio, Verstappen was like, he drove himself off the grass. It was just funny to hear, like, the two guys trying to state their case.
Yeah, exactly, through the team radio. Norris was just trying it on, really. As the steward said, there's no further investigation, and that was the right call, yeah.
Yeah, in the post-race interviews, Norris was like, you know, it's a racing incident, and I didn't expect Verstappen's the last person I expect to give me space, like, in a good way.
Yeah.
That's just Verstappen. That's how he races. He's very, very good at what he does, and as if he was going to let Norris pass.
I know, Max doesn't let anybody pass easily, does he? He just doesn't. He never has and he never will.
Exactly, especially not in the pit lane. Like, he was not going to concede that.
It was just wishful thinking on Norris's part. I actually think the team are lucky that they didn't get a penalty for unsafe release with that one.
Yeah, very true. Mm-hmm. Very true. As far as the rest of the race, I'm pretty sure that was like the most excitement we saw, that almost near incident. In the pit lane, the rest of the race was a total snooze fest.
It was, yeah.
There was just not really much action. I mean, I'm very, very, very happy that we saw Tsunoda overtake Lawson.
Lawson obviously didn't have a great race, finishing in 17th.
And he qualified in 14th.
And Tsunoda finished in 12th. Liam Lawson qualified in 13th, and Yuki Tsunoda was in 14th. So they both made it into Q2.
That was because Sainz got a penalty.
That's right, because Sainz got a penalty for impeding Hamilton. And then Yuki finished the race in 12th position and Lawson finished the race in 17th.
I was doing a little bit of, I've got my list here that I wrote down, and I've kind of drawn lines between the teammates to match up where they are. So Verstappen obviously won the race and Tsunoda finished in 12th, which is an 11 spot difference. But if we compare that to the last even 10, 15 races that the Red Bulls have completed, that's probably one of the smallest gaps that we have seen between the Red Bull drivers. If you're thinking about the difference between Verstappen and Lawson, Lawson finished like last.
Every race.
And then when Perez was his partner, Perez was pretty well down in the bottom five for so many of those races. So I think it was a really, really, really good first race in Red Bull for Tsunoda. He was very unfortunate that he ran wide in qualifying and he lost like a couple of tenths.
Yeah, he did.
Which is so unfortunate because he was on such a good lap, and I think he would have 100% made it into Q3 if it wasn't for that wide. And this racetrack is very much, it's like not on par with Monaco, but it's very similar in the sense that you're track position when you start is so important because there's only one DRS zone, which means there's only one chance for you to, you know, try and overtake. Or is it in the chicane? That was the other overtaking spot.
Well, I think it all depends on the driver, but Carlos Sainz made a few overtakes during the race. But you're right, there is only one DRS zone. Suzuka is a track where your qualifying position almost always determines the race result. It's really super important. That was unfortunate for poor Yuki to not have a great qualifying, but he finished higher than what he started. He kept it clean. I think all in all, a really great race for him.
100%.
I want to give a shout out to Isaac Hadjar. He's in eighth in Racing Bulls, right?
And like I said, I've done my numbers here. If we draw the line between where the Racing Bulls finished, there is a 9-spot difference between Hadjar and Lawson, where it was a great weekend for Yuki and a solid performance, especially given Verstappen put in a mega weekend. If it was anyone other than Verstappen in that car, I think they would have been so much closer, Tsunoda and Verstappen. But, you know, Verstappen is just some freak of nature.
Totally.
It was not a great weekend for Lawson. Let's just...
No, look, it's probably going to take him a little while to bounce back. I mean, it's been pretty horrendous what he's had to go through, demoted down to the sister team after being so hyped up at the end of last year and all through the off season. So it's a massive fall from grace. So another shout out to our Aussie, Jack Doohan, who finished in 15th when he qualified in 19th. So he made up 4 places, which was absolutely awesome for him. And he had a massive shunt, massive off during one of the free practices.
Yeah, free practice too, demolition derby. Like it wasn't a shunt. It was
like a massive impact. And I'm sure he's carrying some bruising as a result of that. Thankfully, he was able to get out of the car seemingly uninjured and he's okay. But to bounce back from that and make up 4 places in the race, credit to him.
Yeah, and Gasly, his teammate, finished in 13th. So there was only Sainz in between them. So it was, you know, Gasly in 13th, Sainz in 14th, and Doohan in 15th. For all the pressure that he has faced, even before he stepped into that seat with everyone, you know, talking about how Colapinto is going to replace him if he doesn't perform, for him to only be separated by one driver from his teammate, you can't say he's not doing a great job. I mean, if the Alpines were up in, you know, the top 5, he'd be sweet as. Like, it's just because they're, like, middle marking team that I think people are like, he's not doing well. No, compared to his teammate, he's doing great, especially like you said, after that crash.
Yeah, and being a rookie.
After his massive crash in free practice too, obviously all the journalists were right up there trying to have a conversation with him. And one of the journalists, I can't remember who it was, tried to bring up the crash and ask him what had happened. Yes. And Doohan, bless his cotton socks, he has been so well media trained. He said then he was like, oh, look, no disrespect, but I'm not going to touch on that. And it was just so calm, so cool, calm, collected. No disrespect, but we're just not going to talk about that. I was like, yes, Doohan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. He handled himself really well. He's not bending to any media pressure whatsoever. You know, when he answers questions like that, questions that are designed to kind of trip him up or give the media some clickbait headlines or something like that, it shows me his maturity and that he's ready for Formula One. It also shows me that he's not feeling, if he's feeling the pressure, he's certainly not showing that he's feeling the pressure.
It's a Piastri-esque, a little bit Verstappen-esque as well, right? Where they're very switched on and they're not allowing anyone to get to them. And they're very cool, calm, and collected when they talk. Whereas someone like Norris, he's so much better these days, but he does let emotion get to him and it comes out in the interviews.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Especially when he was, you know, trying to challenge Verstappen for the title last year, you could see that he was getting like, so there was emotion when he was talking, which is fine. Emotion is great, especially when it comes to men. Show emotion, let it out. It is great. It is fine. But at the same time, when you're talking to the media, that's when it can be a little bit problematic because, as we all know, the media loves to jump on a story and a good example is Doohan. They were flogging this crash in FP2, in media, in social media, talking, you know, they're getting opinions from some bloody magazine in Germany that no one's ever heard of, that's, you know, some journalist had written their opinion, and they're like, oh, this journalist has said, like, it just gets so blown out of proportion. So when you don't give them anything, they can't say anything.
Well, you know, speaking of journalists and getting journalists' opinion, this is a nice little segue. I just want to give a shout out to Lance Magazine in Brazil, who approached me before the Australian Grand Prix for some comment about the situation of motorsport in Australia and what I thought about the future of motorsport in Australia. That was really nice to be asked my opinion, and which I gave, and that story's on the Brazilian Lance Motorsport website, also on my LinkedIn, might be easier to find. Going back to Doohan's crash though, I mean, that was all to do with the DRS flap not closing automatically, mm-hmm. that he had to manually close it, and whether he knew that or didn't know that, or whether in the sim racing he was able to take that corner with the DRS open, or that's what they were saying. Either way, we're just glad that he's okay. Speaking of teams, again, the Ferrari radio. Oh my goodness.
Lewis had to ask where he was losing time, which generally that's something that's readily given to the drivers, right? That's something that the engineer would get on and say.
Lewis asking, where am I losing time? And coming back with turn 7, turn 8, or whatever his race engineer said, Lewis is like, no, how much time am I losing on those turns? And Charles Leclerc was like, you've told me this already. If I'm not doing what you're asking me to do, there's a reason for it. This is the third race this year and third race in a row where the Ferrari team engineers and Ferrari drivers just seem, there's a vibe in that team radio that's a bit tense.
Yeah, it was interesting because the commentators were saying that it sounds tense and it sounds like they might be angry at each other, but we can guarantee they've got a great relationship. It's just, you know, in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, sure.
You don't have time to be like, I'm so sorry, can you just tell me where I'm losing time, please?
Oh, of course not. But also Alex Albon was getting cursed with his race engineer as well.
Very. There was a couple of beeps in the team radio, and he was getting really angry at them for their strategy. He didn't like their strategy. I think, again, it was being said that Albon's probably feeling the pressure this year because he's got Sainz as his teammate, you know, and Sainz is a proven winner. They know that Sainz can win a race. So it's very, very important to Albon. If he can beat and come out on top at the end of the year, that sends a very, very, very strong message to the rest of the paddock, because if he can beat Sainz, that's saying a lot.
And he has the last three races, and he has again this race where, yeah, I'm sure your map between Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz is showing this. Alex Albon finished in 9th and Carlos Sainz finished in 14th. We're talking 35 seconds nearly between them, which is a lot of race pace.
Yeah. Like I've said at the very start of the season, I think Williams is going to be a really good story this year. It's going to be a really great surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there will be a moment where it just clicks with Sainz. I think, unfortunately, there's so little consideration given to all these drivers who are changing team. Yeah, sure, they might have been great in a Ferrari, but they're getting into a brand new car, a brand new feel, and we can't expect them to be amazing straight away. It's the same with the rookies. You can't expect them to get in and be amazing right away. So long as they're not, you know, sending it into the wall, a la, I was about to say Colapinto, not Colapinto. What was his name? The American driver?
Oh, Sargent. Logan Sargent.
Yes, okay. Yeah. So long as you're not sending it into the wall, a la Sargent, every race, so long as there's not a 11-spot difference or a 9-spot difference every single race, then, you know, you've got to give him some credit.
You know, unless your name's Kimi Antonelli, he just drove another epic, awesome race, finished in 6th position in his Mercedes, you know, behind George Russell, who finished 5th, his teammate, experienced race winner. This young 18-year-old from Italy is really just, I'm really enjoying watching him race and even just listening to him speak. He's funny, he's humble. He's the full package, in my opinion.
I agree. And we have to give a whole lot of credit to Ollie Bearman as well. He finished in 10th for Haas.
Esteban Ocon finished in 18th.
The difference between Bearman and Ocon, that's 8 spots. So he finished 8 spots higher than Ocon, who also has won races in Formula One before. And both these guys are new to this car.
And then in 19th position was my cousin, Gabriel Bortoletto, in the Kick Sauber, 1T, not 2. He didn't have a great weekend all round.
Stroll in 20th did not have a great week either.
Did not. No, I didn't actually hear anything about what was going on with Stroll. I mean, he qualified last. He finished last. I don't know whether it's just the car.
He took 2 pit stops as well, but Alonso finished 1 spot out of the point. So it's not like the car can't perform.
And we haven't even mentioned the Ferrari drivers yet. Charles Leclerc finished in 4th, and then his teammate Lewis Hamilton finished in 7th in the Ferrari. The Ferraris did have a different strategy. Each driver had a different strategy, with Lewis starting on hards and Charles Leclerc on mediums.
It was a good haul for them, really. You can't complain with 2 cars in the top 10. So
you can if you're a Ferrari fan. You want them 1-2.
If you're going to look on the bright side of life, at least they've got 2 in the top 10. And you know, I am really happy for Hamilton at the moment, because he's keeping up with Leclerc, which I think, coming from the Mercedes where he was really struggling and not always getting close to Russell, I think, you know, it must be confidence building for him.
I mean, there's still 15 seconds between them in this race, which is not great for Hamilton. Charles Leclerc was way faster. Again, new car, new team, new race engineer, new country, knew everything for Lewis Hamilton.
Just to round off the talk about the race, I noted down that in the cool room, like in the cool down room, top 3 were sitting there, and Piastri, like at the end of the highlights, Piastri was like, was that all for the highlights?
Is that all that happened during the race?
It was quite the snooze fest. Like, there just wasn't any action. Piastri really summed it up well.
He did. He's a man of few words, and those words just hit the nail on the head, just rang true.
This week we're in Suzuka in Japan. A lot of these destinations that are coming out of their winter hibernation and into spring, it's all starting quite early, and there were some beautiful white cherry blossoms around that track in Suzuka. Did you see some of those gorgeous shots they were taking?
The gorgeous shots where they were just using the cinematic mode of blurring out the cherry blossoms and then bringing them into focus at the racetrack in the background. Really, really nice.
And obviously the cherry blossoms are such a draw card for Japan. So imagine being able to go to the Formula One and see the cherry blossoms, just as, you know, any natural kind of occurrence. You can never, ever plan your trip around it, because it's nature. Nature does its own thing. But how lucky for those people that are there to see everything come into bloom right now. I mean, I'm excited in Norway because everything's coming into bloom, but Japan's known for it.
Like you said, the cherry blossoms are a massive tourist draw card to Japan. But I would say that whilst, it would be beautiful to see the cherry blossoms, there's also something to be said traveling to those destinations outside of those peak times when it's just full of tourists.
Yeah. This is one of the things that both you and I, through our jobs as travel writers, we have met with multiple tourism boards from the different prefectures around Japan. And so often, obviously the first thing people think of when they're thinking about going to Japan is Tokyo. And a lot of the tourism boards that we speak to, they're really trying to get people to come and experience their side of Japan. To go back to what you were saying about, you know, peak season and going outside of peak season, you could go in cherry blossom season and not go to these places that people think you go to see the cherry blossoms. They're all over the country. You could go anywhere in the country and see cherry blossoms blossoming. And for your information, cherry blossoms are not pink. That's the plum blossoms. No. The cherry blossoms are white. And so most people get really disappointed when they're like, eh, they weren't even pink. Like, okay, well, there's still beautiful flowers on the trees and they're white. And if you want to see others, go somewhere else. But
yeah.
I did actually find somewhere in Suzuka that you can go to see pink blossoms on the trees, because they are the plum blossoms and they're weeping plums. But they're like, you know, they're
beautiful,
right? They look so magical. So there's a place called the Suzuka Forest Garden. and they have the beautiful weeping pink trees. And cherry blossoms realistically are only at their peak for like 1 to 2 weeks. So yeah. I would not time your visit based on the cherry blossoms. Don't do it. Just know that if you're there and it's spring, you might see them and it's going to be wonderful. But there are so many other beautiful things to do in Japan. I have not been to Japan. You've not been to Japan, have you?
I have been to Tokyo Airport, but that's the extent of it.
Okay. So neither of us has been to Japan, even though it's such a hot destination at the moment. I was looking into where exactly Suzuka was in the grand scheme of Japan. And if you pinpoint Kyoto and Nagoya and drew like a downwards line to a point,
mm-hmm.
so like an upside down triangle, you get to Suzuka. And it only takes you an hour by public transport to get to Suzuka from Nagoya. And Suzuka is quite industrial. I mean, there's still nice looking things to do there, like nice parks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite industrial. So I kind of recommend being in Nagoya and spending time there because that looks really cool.
I'd like to see all of Japan. One thing about Japan that blew my mind when I found out about it is that they've got beaches that look like Rottnest Island. White sand, calm bays, azure water, crystal clear.
Because it's so unexpected, you know, people go for the onsen, people go for the skiing, people go for the cherry blossoms. But Japan has such an incredible seaside culture that and the fisherman's culture, I just don't think that it gets the airtime.
No. And surf, yeah. It's got surf as well.
I did also have a quick look into Nagoya, which is close to Suzuka. And I feel like if you are bringing the family to watch the Formula One, it'd be a great place to spend a few days post-trip because they've got Legoland, they've got the Ghibli Park, there's a railway museum where you can like go into the bullet train cars and train cars of all sorts of other things. If you're into cars, Toyota Commemorative Museum, I mean, probably are just a little bit if you like Formula One. But there's another theme park there. I feel like Japan's one of those places where it's so connected by train that if you went for a week around the Formula One and you could hit up a couple of cities, or if you're not into the city, go out into the countryside or to the beach side, like you said.
That's where I really want to go. I want to go and experience an onsen, the Japanese hot springs that they've got there. I want to go to Japan to eat. I want to go and see the traditional soy sauce houses, the traditional noodle houses.
The sake houses.
Yeah, well, you know, you can have that one. I can take or leave sake, but I'm sure I'd be swayed if I was in Japan and drinking it, you know. So
yeah, I love sake.
Yeah, we know, Mon, you love your whiskey, you love your sake.
See, Japanese whiskey too. I mean, perfection.
True, but speaking of food.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Have you been cooking this weekend, Mon?
I am going to tonight. Everyone keeps asking me if I'm going to cook ramen, and I just think ramen and sushi seemed so predictable. Love them both, don't get me wrong, but like it seems like things that I would cook on a normal weekend. And last time I cooked for Japan, I did okonomiyaki, which is the Japanese pancake, and I did some agadashi tofu, which is the lightly battered and fried, deep-fried tofu in the miso. That was delicious. But this time I'm actually going to make yakitori.
Oh, skewers.
I mean, it sounds so simple, right? And it kind of is, but it's not something that I ever really think to cook. The recipe that I've found looks really, really simple. So if it's a banger, it's probably something that I'll end up cooking regularly.
Well, my mouth's watering now thinking of that. I might actually cook myself some ramen tonight. So what have we got Formula One news-wise?
I mean, obviously the biggest thing that happened was the demotion of Liam Lawson, because we haven't really spoken since that happened. But that's kind of old news now.
You predicted that that would happen, and it did play out exactly as you had said. I was really looking forward to lap one of this race with Yuki just behind Lawson on the grid, and it was just lap one was just as uneventful as the rest of the race. In some kind of unrelated news, one of our first guests, Annie Bradshaw, who was on the podcast, she's opened a new shop. So her shop is called Shoppy McShopface. It's just such a brilliant name. And I don't even know what it's selling or where it is right now. I just saw a quick post about it. So I will find out and we'll revisit this in a later episode once the shop's up and running.
Oh, well, I do actually have some other news that I've been a little bit quiet about, Dan.
Well, I know what you're going to say. You're going to Bahrain, aren't you? And you're going to the race, aren't you?
I'm going to the qualifying.
So brilliant.
That's what I said on the phone call. But the other bit of news is that there might be paddock tickets.
I can't hear you. What? I honestly didn't hear you.
They might be paddock tickets.
I'm super happy for you. I'm super happy for you.
This is why I didn't say anything until now. I wanted to get your reaction.
Oh, that is so exciting. Oh, I knew you had something up your sleeve when you ignored that text of mine about, are you going to the race? It's like, I bet she's got tickets. Well, I didn't know they were going to be paddock club tickets. That's just epic.
I had to keep it cool on the phone because I got a phone call on Friday. So the way that these tickets have come about is that I'm actually going to Bahrain for Spotlight Communications client. It's a brand new hotel on an island in Bahrain called Hawa. It's a Mantis resort. And there's a connection there between Hawa Island Resort and the Formula One by way of the royal family. So there was a tie up with tickets and we weren't sure whether we were going to get tickets. So been on the DL and I got a phone call to say that we didn't get race day tickets, but we got qualification tickets. And I just about died on the phone when she called. She was like, I'm sorry, it's not race day. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
And you know what? Like, I honestly think for anyone listening that wants to go and experience Formula One, but might not be able to afford race day tickets. I mean, qualifying is not too much cheaper, but it is cheaper than race day. Quali is a great day to go to the track. You've got 1 hour of intense track action. And it doesn't really matter. I mean, you need to see a screen because they're racing the clock rather than racing each other. And I love that. It's just super exciting. And there's usually lots of support races on the track as well. Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah. Not paddock tickets for Quali in Bahrain. Oh, wow.
I think I might actually keel over if I see anyone. I just don't know what I'm going to do. I think I might. I just don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you're going to get your phone out and you're going to say, oh, hi, could you give a shout out to our podcast? It's called And Away We Go, F1 Podcast. And you're going to hit video and stick the phone in their face and ask really nicely and smile. That's what you're going to do.
See, I think I'll probably be like, oh.
No, I reckon you'll be able to hold it together.
I don't have chilled eye. I really don't.
I know you're super excitable. Like I am too. But you are also a journalist and a media professional. And I know that you could do it. One video, Mon. One video from one driver. That's your mission. Have you got your itinerary? Are you able to watch the race or are they going to have you doing stuff?
She's so wonderful. She was like, oh, because we're not going to be there on race day. I was looking around to see what was open on Sunday for us to go and do in Bahrain and do some tours or something. And she was like, nothing's open. So what I think I might do is ask the resort if we can check in a day early because the resort is like a 40-minute boat ride away. So we're staying in Bahrain when we get there and for qualification. And then she wants to see if we can check in a day early. And she was like, and then I was thinking of seeing if they could set up a screen somewhere. Surely that we can have a watch party somewhere for the race and maybe like in one of the suites, you know, with drinks and food. And I was like,
sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, we could make that happen.
These suites are like overwater bungalow.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, let's have a watch party in one of the suites. Yes.
Amazing.
And do you know the best thing about all of this is that the job is literally for the resort. I was speaking to the PR company about another resort, which I'm actually going to at the end of April in Tuscany. So I was speaking to them about this resort. And then I dropped in a few Formula One mentions in this conversation we're having. And they're like, wait. Do you like Formula One? And I was like, do I like Formula One? My friend and I have a podcast about Formula One.
You need to change your email footer, my friend, and put a link to this podcast in the email footer. So all the PRs that you deal with know that you don't just like Formula One. You're obsessed to the point where you've got a podcast.
Yeah. I was like, I love it. And they're like, oh, we've actually got this hotel opening and we were going to get people to come to the hotel opening and, you know, the sweetener to the deal, we were going to see if we could get Formula One tickets as well. So, you know, did you want to do that? And I was like, yes. And so I had to try and sell stories on this hotel, which I was a little bit unsure about because I didn't know what the appetite for Bahrain would be from Australian publications. It's not a destination that gets spoken about so readily in media, but sometimes that means you've got a really good chance and sometimes that means you don't have a chance at all. Obviously, yeah. It was a really good chance because I've sold two stories.
Oh, amazing. Oh, well done.
Prior to going.
Oh, so, that's so good.
Yeah, right? But I get to go to the Formula One because of the travel writing job. I was like, oh.
The dream, Mon. You're living the dream. This was the dream when we started this podcast. Mon, speaking of the podcast, this is episode 21. Look, I feel like the podcast is coming of age. Like we've hit a milestone, 21, and we're 4 months in. And just wanted to give a shout out to you and to me for making it happen every single week, besides, I think, one that we had a break over Christmas.
Go us. Our podcast can legally drink in America now.
So next week, we're heading to Bahrain for the race. Document everything. Send me videos. Send me photos. Take heaps of videos.
Well, I'll let you know if I meet any celebrities and keep an eye on our social media channels as well, because I will likely be posting a lot on there.
Make us jealous with everyone that you meet, please. I can't wait to see all this content that's going to come out of Bahrain.
Yeah, I can save a highlight. So, but if you do want to see Bahrain from the paddock, gosh, let's hope now that it definitely is the Paddock Club tickets. If it's not, I will still show you all about Bahrain. Well, you can follow along on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. I'd say there's probably going to be the most on Instagram and TikTok. But yes, follow along there. If you want to send us an email and say how jealous you are, or no, if you want to send us an email, you can email us at andawaywego.f1podcast@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you. So please reach out, send us a comment. Like, rate, and review the podcast, as Mon said. And until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.